Matt Murdock.
Nice to meet you, Matt Murdock.
Nice to meet you. I didn't get your name.
I didn't give it.
Welcome back to A Stark Contrast, where we discuss the differences and similarities between Marvel Comics and their MCU counterparts. And we're your hosts, Jeffrey
and Di.
Hello, hello. We are back, everybody.
Welcome back.
In person.
Holy cannoli.
I know.
That was a journey, huh?
We're getting it done. We're getting it done.
Yeah, we both traveled. We're back. Jeff's about to travel again.
That's true.
And we're this getting things done in between, and yet still on point.
Every
still
time.
Still on schedule.
Yep.
Heck yeah. So we can just dive right into it. So yeah, very quickly, I just got back from GalaxyCon Richmond.
Yes.
Always a great time for GalaxyCon.
Yes.
I ran into my green room adventures are always so unique, even though a lot of the same people come to every show. I ran into Patty Guggenheim, aka Madison, and she was like, I didn't want to get too excited. Like, I didn't know what to say.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of one of those things where it's an unspoken rule of like, respect everybody, right?
Yeah.
And if you see somebody, you don't know if they're going to be like chill with you being like, oh, I love your work or not.
Yeah.
So she was perusing salads.
Of course.
And I was at the other side where the hot food was, and I just looked over and she like waved and smiled, and I was like, left her alone.
Madison with a Y, but it's not where you think.
So funny, I love her. Carl Lumley, aka Isaiah Bradley.
Hell yeah.
Just chilling. And man, I heard him talking when I went in there again. Some other dude was talking to him and like, yeah, and Red Hulk. And I was like, man, I should have said something. But it's the first time I've seen him anywhere.
At a con.
Yeah. So I was like, I kind of wanted to talk to him, but it's fine. Kimiko Glenn, aka Penny Parker from the Spider-Verse movies.
It's Spider time!
Yeah, she had her own table and she was doing signings. And then, of course, Vincent D'Onofrio, Kingpin himself, just chilling in the back room. And I walked by him a few times and I was like, gonna leave him alone.
Is he tall as hell?
He is. He is quite tall. And he's a lot, again, and I think I've said this before, is that he's not big. He's just tall. He's just a tall guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's not heavy. I think he's pretty slim, all things considered. And, you know, the Daredevil show, they kind of do some things. You know, speaking of Daredevil, we're going to talk about Daredevil quite a bit in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know if you noticed this, Jeff, but like in the previous episode before this week. So I guess it was episode 6, right? Six, maybe 5, 6.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
When you start to realize that he's gaining his weight back.
Mm-hmm.
There's like, I don't know if they CGI'd his neck thin or thick. And I think it's thick. I think so. The ones that we're seeing like this week, for instance, with the new episode, I think they CGI him to look a little thicker, or they do something to make him look
fluffy. No, that makes sense, because Kingpin is supposed to be a really big,
a big guy,
big figure. Yeah.
It's so interesting. So, but yeah, Vincent looks like an average Joe, and he was just chilling in the green room, and I was just like, man, you're so amazing. Just like walking by him, like, you're a god. But always a good time. And then, as I was en route to Richmond, Jeff and I were texting about this insane live stream that Marvel put on. And I honestly, I'd seen it when it first went live. And I was like, what the heck are they doing?
I know.
And I thought it was just a Chris Hemsworth thing. I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
What is Chris Hemsworth? Oh, yeah. 4 or 5. And so I didn't think about it. And then we started to put together like, oh, they're announcing the cast, at least the first half of the top billing cast for Avengers Doomsday, with all the chairs.
Yeah, just the cast that we know about so far.
Right. So far, which of course, you know, on April Fool's Day was just an opportunity and a half for many people to play that. But yeah, so I'm not even going to go through the list, but it's a lot of people.
It's a good list.
It's a good, healthy, weighty list. I wanted to say was ballparking 25, maybe. And the rumor has it, it's only the first half. So that's insane. But a few of our listeners, you know, we asked who everybody was most excited about. Ariel Tima mentioned, not gonna lie, Nightcrawler.
Sundaria,
yeah, Loki. Peach Optimo, the return of all these OG X-Men is wild.
That one is a crazy one.
Yeah. And then Batfan Addict as well. X-Men.
How do they all interact? How do they all come together in this movie?
Sure. Yeah. Especially, you know, because when they announced Kelsey Grammer, it was like, okay.
That makes sense.
Sure. The Marvels. If you watched the Marvels, you saw this amazing CGI beast with Kelsey Grammer's voice. But to then go further and bring back Sir Patrick Stewart into the mix and it potentially be the one that did not die in Multiverse of Madness.
Obviously.
Which one is it?
Obviously,
which one is it? Yeah.
The one in Logan, the main one.
Yeah. He passed away. Yeah.
The one in the multiverse.
Yeah.
Earth 8 something?
It's like 9003.
I know there's an eight in there. Yeah, I know that. Yeah. That one's dead. So it's well then obviously it's probably the one in Monica Rambeau's universe that she's stuck in.
So curious.
So yeah.
And then
with Photon.
And with Photon, yeah. And then Sir Ian McKellen as well. And then they had to one up themselves even more and announce that not only was Alan Cumming coming back as Nightcrawler, indeed, but Rebecca Romijn, the OG Mystique, in addition to...
Your mans.
My mans! Scott! I did... This is like legit. I probably said it in at least 10 episodes where I'm like, God, if I could just get James Marsden
as
Cyclops, I got it! And it got Channing Tatum back.
So that's cool. Yes, Di's very excited about Channing Tatum, guys.
So excited, guys. I hope that they just give him the eyes and they make that little change on his mask.
Hey, I mean, he did say,
solid.
I'm going to mega Nimba myself here.
Well, I'm curious if it's going to be the same one.
Like, well, one, he has to get out of the void.
Does he, though? That's where he was born. The other universes can have gambits too. So I'm curious if they're going to play around because we've seen a gambit.
Yeah.
Let's see another gambit. Which gambit is it going to be? It's going to be awesome.
He's not going to have he's not going to have the full suit then. Watch. It's going to be one, just a regular trench coat. No.
But if Gambit has some good outfits, like some spy outfits, like if they,
It's going to be
I'm excited.
It's going to be, it's going to be a hefty movie, obviously.
It's so great.
Seeing characters we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
So.
I bet you James Marsden is going to look exactly the same. He has not aged. aged very well.
It's true. Yeah. He's very good on, he's very good on that show on Hulu.
Yeah. Paradise. Yeah.
Paradise.
Yeah.
Very good show.
Yeah. I can't wait to watch that actually.
Yes.
But yeah, super excited. Do you have a favorite? Mine is obviously, my favorite announcement is James Marsden, but
The OG X-Men I think it's just cool. It was like surreal to be like, oh my God, yes, all these MCU characters that we know. And then now it's like, oh my God, these are the Fox.
Yeah.
So it's like, they're actually like, they're doing it. Like they're doing it.
Yeah, they're really
It's
really
all going to be in one movie.
Yeah.
You know, the next iteration of this obviously is a DC crossover.
I mean,
a DC movie crossover with characters.
They're re-releasing this comic book, or I think it's a re-release, or they're releasing a DC versus Marvel book this summer.
Yeah.
So, and it's a revival of a 90s title. So,
yeah, it's just the.
Why not?
I think it's just crazy. We're like Marvel now has like a control over so many of these characters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can just kind of throw them in to serve like whatever story you're trying to tell.
Exactly. Oof. It's going to be wild. It's going to be wild. So as if that wasn't enough, as of yesterday, we're recording on April Fool's Day for the record. Mm-hmm. As of yesterday, we officially have a title for Tom Holland's fourth Spider-Man film, Spider-Man Brand New Day. So not only is Tom the first Spider-Man to finally make four films, but this... title alone, I texted Jeff and I was like, wow, because it is very prominent if you know your comics, and it's an homage to a 2008 comic book run led by Dan Slott, where Spidey's true identity was forgotten by the world, if that sounds at all familiar. So curious what they're going to do with it.
Yeah.
There's other things that happened in that storyline. It took course of like, I want to say 2 years-ish over like maybe 20 issues. So
yeah.
I don't expect it to have a lot of crossover and overlays, but there's probably going to be some throwbacks here and there, you know, especially that forgotten identity one, yeah. Number one.
Well, obviously. Unfortunately, Dan Slott no longer posts on Twitter, only on Blue Sky.
Yes.
So
yeah,
I don't know how he
how he's on Threads too
would be reacting, but I'm sure he's probably like,
I'm so curious. I know. I'm sure he said something about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's gonna be really, really fun. And then of course more Spider-Man news. Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse officially has a release date of June 4th, 2027. That is correct. More than 2 years from now.
Well, better to take your time than rush something.
Well, this is already...
yeah, that is a long time.
We've pushed it 2 years already, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Oh, boy. That's crazy. So that's a long, long
time. That's
2 years from now. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
So some good Spider-Man news, some sad, but, you know, it's better news... then no news.
Exactly.
And one more thing before we dive into this week's episode, as Bucky Barnes is playing his ball in the background.
It's
holy
fine.
Smokes. I just got a fresh delivery in the mail just in time for Daredevil Tuesday.
Oh my gosh.
From Tops.
Oh, you're doing the
cards?
You're doing the cards?
Yeah, but Jeff, these are super, super duper special.
Which one? I haven't
opened these yet.
Okay.
I just opened the box. Okay. These are randomly distributed.
Okay.
One of, I want to say...
Oh my God, you got a lot of packs. Jesus.
I got five.
Oh my God.
Because it was cheaper to get five than just one. And so these are limited edition.
Okay.
Daredevil release day. Single special packed cards. And there are four variants.
Okay.
And I don't know which ones I have.
Okay.
They're random.
There's individual cards in there?
Individual release day cards. And these are limited to like 200 or something.
Did you want to open one right now?
Oh, we're going to open some.
Oh, we're going to open?
You want me to?
Oh my God.
You're going to open two. Don't tear anything.
Okay. Guys, I am very scared.
This is really fun. Oh, I can't wait. So I just want the one with Daredevil and Kingpin. Or Daredevil by himself. If I get five Kingpins, I'm going to cry.
Ah, you want one where both of them are on
it. I want the main poster. So yeah, open that.
Okay.
Open that bad boy up. So, yes.
Okay.
I got one.
You got?
I got the one I wanted for sure.
You got? Oh, that one?
So it is the...
Well?
Daredevil? Are they all the same?
Make that two.
Oh, no. Are they the same?
Well? Okay.
Okay.
The devil's work is never done.
The devil's. So it's really cool. You see it's in its own little pack.
Yeah.
And
wow, trading cards are making a
comeback,
huge
right?
thing.
Oh, same.
This one is different.
Oh, is it? Which one is it? Oh, I got the one! Yes! Oh, that's a good one.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a foiled Daredevil.
See, I don't know.
Okay, so I got four of the same and then the special.
I don't know anything about this.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so there is a Daredevil by himself.
Yeah.
A Fisk by himself. Foil and I think non-foils.
How do you know this is foil?
You can see like it's a little shiny. It's shiny, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, okay.
There
so
you go.
These are for sale. And these are for me. Yeah. Oh, sick. Okay, cool. So I got one special one. Very, very.
Yeah, baby. That's what I do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ooh, that's schmixy.
Oh, yeah. It is shining. I can see
it. I like that. I like that a lot. But yeah, very cool. Very cool Tops now. So they're doing these individual release day cards. Yeah, these are like one in 20 out of 200.
Oh, my God.
So... Glad I got
opened
him.
It.
Glad I got good luck. Good Jeff. Good pull. Woo!
Hell
so
yeah.
Very happy. But speaking of hell yeah, and speaking of Daredevil, we're gonna talk all about Daredevil in this episode, but not about Matt Murdock. We're gonna talk about somebody else in his purview. But just a reminder, we're not experts. We don't claim to be. We're just a couple of nerds nerding out.
Mm-hmm.
And in this episode, we're nerding out all over Elektra.
Yep.
So, just in case you wanted some related content, check out episode 37, Daredevil, for more. But we'll jump right into it. So, created by Frank Miller. Are you at all familiar with...
I swear I thought it said Frank Castle. And I was like, that's crazy.
I mean...
That's crazy.
Same difference. Frank Miller.
Sounds familiar, but can't say that...
Are you familiar with a comic or a movie called Sin City? Sin City.
Okay.
Big one. And so Frank Miller.
I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. The art style and all that. Frank Miller's a big guy when it comes to comic lore, especially with Daredevil. Funny enough. And so Elektra's first appearance was in Daredevil number 168, cover dated January 1981. Mm. And I believe Frank not only penned the issue, but he also drew it.
Okay.
He's one of those. It's kind of rare to find somebody that
writes and draws.
Yeah.
That's a lot of skill.
And well. And the issue title is simply Elektra, spelled correctly, because... If you look at the issue cover itself, it is quite funny because if you look on this little box here, the spelling, there is a massive typo in her name. And it's E-L-E-C-K-T-R-A. And evidently, I did a little digging because I was like, there's got to be a good reason for this.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap. Can you imagine getting it back and you're like... And you're Frank Miller, you get this back and you're like,
that's not her name.
You fool. So evidently this was simply due to miscommunication between Frank Miller and whoever laid out the cover lettering. So they just accidentally did that, which
wow.
In all fairness is this is how it's spelled in history. Mm. So we'll talk a little bit about the namesake as we go along. But do you want to give it a go as far as cover price goes?
In the 80s?
I'm going to hold this up. 1981.
15?
Mm.
No.
The face I made.
Inflation is crazy. 25?
No, more.
30?
More.
50 cents?
50 cents.
Inflation goes crazy because in the set, literally a decade ago, it was like... 12.
25. Yeah.
Maybe even 20. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this one was 50 cents. When my it first God. Came out.
Wow.
Yeah. And so very, very interesting. As you can see, very simple. Daredevil, the man without fear. And then the bubble says, Elektra, once he loved her, and now she is his most deadly enemy.
True.
And it just, as most of these covers are, they don't give the full character reveal. It's just a shadowy effect. And so... as far as the graded versions I found for sale, the highest graded I found was a CGC 9.6, only $850.
Interesting.
Which I find, as an Elektra fan...
A little undervalued.
A little undervalued for a 9.6?
Yeah, 9.6 is
less
high,
than $1,000?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Put some respect on her name.
Truly. She's worth more than that, as Peggy Carter would say. Know your value. Or know your worth, whatever
know
she
your
says.
Worth.
Yeah. And then on eBay, a CGC 9.8 with a signature, gold signature series signed by Stan Lee. $7,000.
That's significantly more.
I know. But that's so interesting, right? Because it's not like Stan Lee himself created that character.
Yeah.
It is a character created under...
Marvel.
The company that
sure,
Stan Lee
sure,
created,
yes, yes.
Right? So it's like Frank Miller... If you got Frank Miller to sign it, to me, that's a different
that's
story.
Worth, yeah.
Yeah. So it is interesting that it goes for $7,000. Whereas the lowest I found, a CGC 4.0 was $140. And then a CGC 5.0 was $175. So not too bad across the board. You could get the fair market value is apparently 9.4 for anything. You could get a 9.4 for about 350 to 450. And then raw, you could get it for about $150 to $300, depending on the condition.
It's not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I was like, all right, that's not too bad. Because I don't actually have this issue. I wish I did. I don't. Because I always thought, I was under the assumption that, oh yeah, it's so expensive. But apparently not. So maybe it's almost time. But yeah, that's a pretty good way to collect if you are looking for some key Daredevil issues for that aren't going to break the bank.
Yeah.
So what was your first exposure to this character?
Oh, the great Jennifer Garner.
Yeah.
Easy,
right?
Easily. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Wow. So 2003. Well,
2003?
In 2003 or after?
Pretty much. Like when the movie came out. Yeah. I remember watching that movie.
Amazing. Yeah.
What about you?
Definitely comics. Definitely comics. I can remember that one very clearly. Yeah, I don't even understand or recall when I started to read Daredevil, but I was definitely maybe late 90s, because it was a bit more mature, if you will, than, you know, X-Men. And so it was kind of in the in-betweens of X-Men and Spider-Man for me. And it was a bit darker, so I didn't sway too much into it until I was probably early mid-20s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it took me a while, but I got into it. And she was definitely a character I found to be very interesting. I was kind of low-key obsessed with her. Low-key obsessed. And so much so that when the movie finally came out, and I was I in college? I think I was in college.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I was in college. Probably first year, whatever. And my boyfriend at the time knew I was obsessed with it. And so for Valentine's Day, he gave me a dozen red roses and a pair of size.
And a pair of, oh, okay.
Her weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was lined, it was black. It's a black case lined with red.
Oh.
And he knew I was so into Elektra. He was like, here you go. I still have them.
Wow.
If you want to play with them, I have them. They're heavy. They're pretty heavy. Loved the character. So, but I admittedly don't know much about her inner workings in between her modern era and her beginnings. So I don't know much of the middle story.
Got it. Okay.
Other than the fact that she's crazy banana pants. She's crazy banana pants for sure. I have tons and tons of cards. I did not pull them out this time. However, I do have her in my mini book. And so this will be interesting for you, Jeff, because if Jennifer Garner is your only exposure to this character so far, holy smokes, you're in for a ride. So, wait, did you see Elektra?
I didn't watch the series, but I obviously know her also from the Daredevil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, trained in ninja arts by Matt Murdock's mentor, Stick, Elektra Nachios has battled her own addiction to violence as both friend and foe of Daredevil through life, death, and rebirth. She is one of the world's foremost martial artists and is a peerless assassin.
It sounds like you said Elektra Nachios.
I mean, most people do think that. electric nachos.
Elektra Nachios.
Yeah, Elektra Nachios.
Oh, she was trained by Stick.
By Stick, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's incredibly different because, well, if you only watched the Daredevil film, you would not know that. But we're going to get into it very, very shortly.
Oh, yeah.
And so as for the issue, her first appearance issue for Daredevil 168 itself.
Yeah.
The issue itself begins like any ordinary Daredevil comic from that era. Daredevil's on the streets. He it's at night and he's sniffing out Turk. Do you remember Turk?
He
was in the series as well. Yeah. So Turk, a character we've seen, he's pretty prominent in the first two seasons of Daredevil Netflix. And so Daredevil is on the hunt for a thief named Alaric. I don't know if it's Alaric. That's such a bizarre name to me.
Alaric?
Alaric or Alrich?
Sure.
Alaric. Wallenquist.
What a name.
Yeah. Alaric Wallenquist.
That's like a old-timey, old English name right there. Yeah,
exactly. And so he's looking for this thief who was a witness, a key witness in a recent murder. Mm-hmm. And so at this point in the comic series, Turk and Daredevil have kind of like created this dynamic of like, oh, and you see it in the show where the minute he sees Daredevil, he's like, man, you already got me. Why are you coming? And then Daredevil's like shaking him down for
come
info.
On.
Yeah. And so Turk takes this particular opportunity to prove himself at long last. But of course he fails in the midst of the scuffle. And so this other man enters the picture, a guy named Eric Slaughter. And
wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
And so there is a modern day comic called Something is Killing the Children. Uh-huh. And the main character in that comic is Erica Slaughter. And I was like, huh.
That's interesting.
Is there any relationship?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There's not at all. It's not even Marvel. But I'm curious if the creators were the least bit, inspired. But Eric Slaughter enters the picture. And so Eric is not only Turk's boss, but he was also hired to protect Alaric. Mm. It's so this is a little weird. It's kind of like what we saw in this week's episode of Daredevil, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like this weird interception of people that are supposedly supposed to collaborate and work and protect one another,
yeah,
but they're also in line against certain points of the triangle. It's very interesting. So anyway, so just as Daredevil is making some semblance of progress, another surprise enters the picture, and it's Elektra. And so I have her first panel here. And what I loved about Frank Miller's original art is that he drew faces like in a way that other artists had not quite captured. Uh-huh. He drew his women with large eyes, full lips, and like also sharp features. And so same thing was true with Elektra. And so she comes in, and this this exact moment, like she comes in and he's completely thrown off. He's like, wait a minute, is that? And it's kind of like in the series, if you recall, in season 2 of Daredevil, that he's so thrown off that he's taken aback. And so this is the exact moment in the comics that they inserted a flashback of 19-year-old Matt Murdock.
Oh, wow.
Very much like the show did, right? And so you see 19-year-old Matt Murdock and his pal Foggy Nelson as they're attending Columbia University. So these are all key factors that they've actually brought into the show. And so I was, as you saw, Jeff, earlier, I was recapping the season 2 and just like kind of going back and checking out and realizing like, yeah, they actually, as different as it was, and we'll talk about this shortly, is they also made sure to keep it fairly accurate. I would be and am, as a Daredevil fan, very happy that they actually kept stuff pretty solid. And so in this flashback in the comics, the two then encounter a campus ambassador who's giving a tour to a trio of people. And so just for the record, Matt and Foggy are studying pre-law at Columbia while Elektra was studying political sciences. So this is actually pretty important for the overall story.
Uh-huh.
And so the tour includes Hugo Nachios and his daughter Elektra and a very large bodyguard by the name of Athos.
Okay.
And so immediately you kind of get this impression that this is no ordinary family, but Matt is hardly dissuaded. And so it's interesting the way that they, because, you know, you think about how we perceive these heroes on screen and how they do the narrative storytelling.
Uh-huh.
And so in the comics, it's quite different. There's no audio, right? So they're detailing what Matt is thinking and how he's smelling the scent of her and hears the exact distinct footstep of her walk, you know? And so he's describing all these things and you just immediately get the sense that he's immediately attracted to this woman.
Of course.
Matt Murdock. And so he's instantaneously enamored by this dark-haired Grecian beauty. And so that even after... So he goes up to her and he tries to kind of play his hand. He's like,
yeah.
Oh, would you like to go out sometime?
Of course.
And she says... She actually wants to, but is very honest and says, but, and you get the idea that, oh, it's because he's blind that she doesn't want to go out with him.
Damn.
I know. I was like, wow, okay. And, you know, he decides to then share himself with her and he tells her why he became blind and all that stuff. And so the funny thing is that it actually worked. She didn't feel sympathy for him necessarily.
Okay.
Like she did, but she also kind of admired the fact that he was still able to get around and move the way he moves.
Yeah.
Being a blind man. And so the two ended up having a wonderful relationship for a year until something really crazy happened. And so I spelled it as such and say that because in the comic... There is quite literally a panel where this guy, Foggy, goes up to somebody on campus and this person's like there's this really intense scene in there, you know, there's these guys holding hostages like in the administration building, intense, really intense. And Foggy's
That's
just
hilarious.
Like, it's really intense. And in all honesty, it was because... There is a hostage situation with terrorists, and mm-hmm. they were holding these people for ransom, and it ends up being the ambassador and his daughter. And so Matt was supposed to meet Elektra at this specific building in the comic. And so he decides, I'm going to take the situation into my own hands. And so you have to remember, Matt hasn't yet become Daredevil at this point in his life.
Got
He's
it.
Still just Matt. 20. He's 20 at this point. They are 20 at this point. And so he hasn't, yeah, he's just Matt Murdock. He's Matt Murdock, the pre-law student
yes.
at Columbia. And so, but he has already, you know, come a long way as far as understanding how his powers work.
Yeah.
And how his senses have like enlightened and are enhanced. And so he decides to take the situation in his own hands. And then he had a scarf of Elektra's that he was going to gift her. And it's a red scarf. And so in the comic, he puts it over the top portion of his head.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's
wow.
like this show.
That's, yeah, the first season, first good? Episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And they even call back to it in Defenders, for instance, where he's like, let me borrow your scarf to Jessica Jones. And he puts it on. And she's like, you look dumb.
Yeah,
and he
kind of
looked
right.
dumb. Yeah, he looked dumb in the comic. But yeah, he was wearing this red scarf around his head.
That's funny. Wow.
Yeah.
And what a callback.
Right. The callback is incredible. And so he disguises himself. And then he, like, you know, essentially parkours up this building
yeah.
on the other side where the police are not. And so he jumps into action. You know, and he's already, again, he's already kind of building his skills. He's not perfect, but he's getting there. And he's successful in saving the duo until Hugo stands up. So Elektra is bound. Her arms are like behind her, the small of her back, and her father is tied up to a chair. And the two duck down because the police are obviously aware that there's a hostage situation. And Matt, I think one of the guys fumbled and fell out of the window, one of the people that were holding them hostage. And so the police immediately think, oh my God, they're killing the hostages. Not that
yeah.
somebody's actually jumping in to take care of business, uh-huh. right? Because yeah, there's no vigilantes at this point, at least in Colombia. And so Matt and Elektra are ducking away from the windows and Hugo, stumbling, you know, tied to this chair, decides to stand up. And Matt is like, sir, like, don't do that. Like, stay yeah. down, stay down. And unfortunately, the police then see an opportunity. Oh, that must be the perpetrator.
Because he has to, yeah.
And they light up the window.
Oh, my God.
And he gets shot like 7 times. And he gets shot by the officials who were there to save him. And so that is the exact moment. And the panels are so incredibly crazy because, like, again, Frank Miller has a very distinct art style. And so
yeah.
as you look at the panels, panel by panel by panel by panel, it's a wide shot and it's Elektra just mortified and Matt is right next to her. And then the next panel, it's closer and closer and closer to the point it's just her eyeball. And she's just, you can see the terror in her eyes.
Yeah.
And so this exact moment is the crux of their relationship and it changes it forever. It's very notable that like he's with her throughout this entire journey. So they have to bury Hugo. There's a funeral. And Matt notes that she never cries. She doesn't cry when he's shot. She doesn't cry in the aftermath. She doesn't cry at the funeral. And she just becomes a different person.
Yeah.
And so then Elektra decides, I'm going to leave for Europe. And she says in the comic, she quote unquote says, I cannot continue to study laws that I no longer believe in.
Mm.
And it puts them at odds because, again, Matt is studying pre-law.
Yeah.
And if she can't believe in the system that he is studying to protect and uphold,
mm-hmm.
she's got to go.
Yep.
Really puts them at odds. They break up. And so that's the end of the flashback, and it goes back to present tense. And Matt, as Daredevil, is still reeling like, oh my God, she's back. And he's quite literally like, almost like in a fetal position on the street in the rain.
Oh my gosh.
Because he's so like, it was his first love and he hadn't thought about her in a decade type of deal.
Yeah.
And so he's like recalling like what happened and how she left and now, you know, that she's apparently a bounty hunter and she sells her skills to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
And it's literally everything that he despises. And mm-hmm. so they became one another's like pure
enemies.
Opposition.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it makes what the book said even more accurate. Like she's a friend and lover, but she's also a foe and an enemy.
Yeah.
And so the issue continues on and Elektra is looking to complete her task because she has this bounty she has to take care of. And things go sideways. She, you know, the gang that she goes up against, she gets tranked. And Daredevil arrives just in time to help her. And he calls her by her name. He calls her by a nickname that he used in their youth. So in the issue, he keeps calling her Olive Oil. Which is a Popeye thing. And so he says, hit him low, Olive Oil. And he says it a few times. And so when I thought it was just Popeye, I was like, I gotta find out what exactly this is about. 1981, very interesting. But apparently it's a callback to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Interesting.
And I was like, 1981?
The original?
I guess that's...
Like a movie? The movie?
No, just in comic continuity.
Oh.
I guess that's correct. But yeah, it was apparently a throwback to Ninja Turtles. But... Anyway, like that's the moment that Elektra puts together, oh, Matt is Daredevil. So she didn't know it was even him. So he was fighting her and she has no idea. She just wants to kill him. Lo and behold, it's Daredevil. And so the two kiss and say nothing before Daredevil leaves. And for the first time in seemingly all her life, Elektra finally cries.
Wow.
Yeah. And so if you can believe it, Elektra's first appearance was intended to be her one and only appearance ever.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Miller was like, she's going to be in one issue and then she's done. That's it.
Mm-hmm. But, wow, interesting.
Yeah, as we know it, that did not stick. So that brings us to Elektra Nachos in live action.
Dude, Nachos is crazy.
Nachos! I know, we should have gotten some Taco Bell. So portrayed first by Jennifer Garner in the 2003 masterpiece, Daredevil.
Say what you want.
I loved that movie. I watched it again yesterday.
For the time? Yeah, man.
I was like all over that. The soundtrack is amazing. Ben Affleck was great. Everything to me was pretty solid.
Yeah.
It wasn't perfect, but it was solid. And so directed by Mark Steven Johnson. And so... on IMDb, it has a 5.3 out of 10. Not horrible. Not great.
Not great.
11% rotten, 29% popcorn meter. So people don't like this movie.
Yeah, of course.
I love this movie.
I thought it was fun.
And then on Letterboxd, it has 2.1 stars. And then in Elektra, 2005's Elektra, directed by Rob Bowman, she was portrayed by Laura Ward as a child and again by Jennifer Garner. That film, so you haven't seen Elektra?
I probably have.
Yeah.
I just don't really remember much of it.
It's fine. I can see why it didn't do well. Mm-hmm. It's kind of obvious. It's like people weren't quite ready. Like people loved Jennifer Garner.
But she was, yeah.
Yeah, she
like
was
mid, hot. Early 2000s, yeah, mid-2000s? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Totally an it girl. But the people weren't ready for an Elektra movie, which was interesting. And so Elektra itself has a 4.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 11% rotten, 29% popcorn meter, just like Daredevil, and then on Letterboxd, 1.6 stars. So people did not like this film. I thought it was okay. Not bad. She's great. She's fantastic. The rest of the movie is like stinky poo-poo. It's not good. And so that is not the end of the Elektra lineage, however. She was then portrayed as a youth by Lily Chi for Elodie Young's Elektra in season 2 of Daredevil in 2016, as well as in The Defenders in 2017. Only to return to Jennifer Garner's time-displaced Elektra once again in 2024's Deadpool and Wolverine, directed by Sean Levy.
Yep.
So we've gone full circle with this one.
That's crazy.
It's so wild. Yeah, so 2003, 2005, 2016, 2017, 2024. We've already seen her in five different iterations. And
still very relevant.
Two women. Yes, yeah. So incredible. And so on the live action side, you tell me how much of this you remember. So in Daredevil, the film.
Yes.
She was presented as a daughter of the wealthy and prominent Greek-American figurehead in the films, but her origins are further revealed in the subsequent media released after 2003's Daredevil. So Garner's version had been endurance trained by her father at a young age in the Elektra film, presumably taught to fight somewhere down the line. Whereas Elodie Young's version had a similar upbringing, but within the chase with Stick, who was later deemed, she was later deemed too dangerous to be among the group. And then she was then adopted and raised by the Nachioses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting right there in that point, because you have Column A, where she was very much their daughter.
Yeah.
Raised as a debutante.
Sure.
And then trained. And then Elodie Young's version was somehow ended up with Stick in the Chaste clan.
Yeah.
And then they put her up for adoption with this Greek family.
Crazy, dude.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm curious why they decided to go that route. But later in life, Elodie Young's Elektra attempted to get Matt to kill his father's killer, Roscoe Sweeney. And that incident separated the two for many years until their reunion later in life. So I don't know if you remember this. This was like, I almost forgot this even happened until I rewatched it. But this is when they were in college in season 2 of Daredevil, the Netflix series.
Okay.
They're imagining their life together. They're in college. They're probably like 21-ish.
Okay.
And they go to this like mansion and he's like, oh, whose house is this? And she's like, oh, it's one of my father's business colleagues.
Of course.
Yeah. I love her accent. You know,
yeah.
Say what you will about Elodie Young, but I love her accent as Elektra. And they end up having this man tied up to a chair, and it ends up being Roscoe Sweeney, who killed Matt's father. And so she's provoking Matt to, you know, for lack of better words, to let the devil out and kill this man and get revenge, because that's what she was so bloodlusty, you know?
Yeah.
That's now,
that, yeah, that I do remember being violent for her version. Yeah.
So violent. And so, so she attempted to get him to kill Roscoe Sweeney, and that just blew them up because he wouldn't do it. He beat him up a bit.
Yeah.
He roughed him up and then realized, oh God, what have I done? And then she was like, end it, Matt. Kill him. Take his life for killing your father. And then he just couldn't do it. And so he called 911. And that was it. She left. He never saw her again until she returned. And very much like the comic in that way, that she's popped up in his apartment and was like, hello, Matthew. This part that I'm about to mention is where it kind of took a hard left turn for me, is when it was revealed that she was destined to become the Black Sky, right? Mm-hmm. The Hand's leading weapon of power. Because they made this big deal about, oh, this child that was in a container from Japan, and he's a Black Sky, and they, like, they're trying to get the weapon before everybody else, and then it's like, oh, the child was a ruse. It's actually Elektra, who is the Black Sky. And so they kind of, this is like in the Defenders series. And I don't remember if you saw Defenders. You didn't,
No.
It's a lot. It's a
lot. I
know.
I mean, very during that time of the Netflix era of those series, it was a lot. They were just pumping them out.
Yeah, it was very, very ambitious. And again, it's kind of one of those things where it's like they may have jumped the shark a bit.
Yeah.
Especially because you would have had to have watched Iron Fist and Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Daredevil.
Yes.
And so, it was a bit hefty, but at the end of the Defender series, you know, once all this stuff is going down with the Hand, and it's Daredevil versus Elektra, and Elektra versus the Defenders, and then also the Hand and her being Black Sky, Sigourney Weaver is like the main antagonist.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very, very interesting. So at the end of the series, she dies. she's under the collapsed building with Daredevil.
Yeah.
Destined to die together. It was so... Rewatching that was so interesting because she's so Elodie Young when she speaks as Elektra. Mm-hmm. She almost hisses and she's very sharp.
Oh, okay.
And so she's like, Matthew.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's like, we'll die together. We're meant to be together. Oh, you know, and she just keeps saying all these crazy things. And so she presumably died at the end of that series. She's dead. Her body was not found, mm-hmm. even though Matthew continued on in Daredevil season 3.
Yes.
So we've yet to see her return to MCU continuity, but that's beyond the return of Jennifer Garner.
Oh, yeah.
As Elektra, again, in Deadpool and Wolverine. And so she's presumably of Earth 701306, which is continued from the Elektra film. So from Ben Affleck's future. So, yeah, interesting. So, because that one, like, I don't know if you've seen the videos that Jen has posted, but, or even the assembled, right?
Yeah.
She mentions that her universe's Daredevil, which would be the Ben Affleck one.
True.
Died.
Ah.
And her suit is made of the same material that his was.
His is, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's the deep red, and it's got the embellishments and stuff. And that she carried on the legacy, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm curious what we're going to see next as far as Elektra goes. But before we continue on, I just wanted to take the quick look into the origin of her namesake. Mm-hmm. So this is something we haven't done since our Gamora episode, because Gamora was such an interesting name, and it's like, oh, it actually has biblical ties.
Yeah.
And so for Elektra in Greek drama, Elektra, also known to be spelled with a C, was the daughter of Agamemnon and Clytemnestra.
Sure.
I was I agree with you. If I didn't mess up Agamemnon, I knew I was going to mess up Clytemnestra. So, from Getty, this is the most simple, basic understanding of who Elektra is in Greek drama. So, for clarity, she may not have been a real person. They don't know, because there's so much stuff fictionalized of this character.
Yeah.
But it's possible this woman actually existed in real life. And so, Elektra in Greek mythology is regarded as, quote unquote, devastated by her father's death. She was a wild and empathetic character. She wasn't civilized in a soft, feminine, graceful way because she was consumed with anger and revenge. For her, there was no relief from her rage.
Oof.
So, Frank Miller, clearly a fan of Greek drama.
Yeah.
That is very much the Elektra that we know
as
well. And she also lost her father. And so it just sets course for her character. And she's basically...
Pure rage. Yep.
Yeah. Anger, revenge, rage. No relief. Yeah. Nailed it. So for aesthetics, if you scroll down, Jeff, you'll see it. Very plain and simple. The woman does not wear anything but red and black. Red and black. And so as far as Jennifer Garner is concerned, they never quite stuck the landing when it came to Elektra's live action attire. And then the most remotely comic accurate version appeared a decade later with 2016's Daredevil season 2. And that that is one of those instances where it preceded a comic book design. So she appeared in the show and then they're like, she's going to get a new suit in the comics. And then they made the second suit in our picture here.
Got it.
That's why it looks the way it does.
Got it.
It looks like it's on point. And then the final costume on our doc, it's Elektra's own Daredevil costume, which we'll talk about more near the end of the episode. And then last but not least, James Ikson led costume design for Daredevil, the film. Lisa Tomczyzin led on Elektra, and she was an associate designer on Daredevil, the film. Lorraine Calvert on Daredevil season 2, and Stephanie Maslansky on The Defenders.
Nice.
Powers and paraphernalia. So, much to your delight, but your soon-to-be dismay, originally, Elektra had no powers. Just the normal martial artist.
Just badassery.
Basically.
Pure rage.
Right. After her resurrection, however.
Oh, God. Jesus, man.
Yep.
She has telekinesis. She can talk to animals. And she she's cool with Mephisto.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah,
you're very close, very close.
I hate that I'm right.
It's like her own version of Mephisto, actually, because Elektra displayed enhanced abilities due to her connection to this thing called the Beast, which is a demon heralded by the Hand. It's their own Mephisto.
I don't like this. Everyone's invincible in the comics.
Everybody. And so when she was once a martial artist, she now possesses the powers, including but not limited to assassin instinct, mind switch, so she can discern targets and location. This is actually something they honed in on more in the Elektra movie. And so you don't see it anywhere else except for the... And it was funny because like at the time I was like, the hell? Like, how can she... She almost has like premonitions in the film.
Yeah.
And it's that. It's mind switch. Hypnosis, heightened awareness, telekinesis, telepathic communication, precognition, telepathic immunity, and silent scream.
Silent scream, yeah. Sounds
yeah,
so dangerous.
Yeah, so it's all projection. It's all this thing in the film, they called it Kimaguri, and it's like it's just focusing your chi. So it's all Got focusing. It's all that on, at least for her. And so as far as telekinesis and telepathic communication goes, it's like she can share that stuff, but with people that are of the same consciousness. So people in the Chase, which is like the good version of the Hand.
Got it.
She can do it with them, but not like everybody. So she's not like Jean Grey or something, but she still has a bit of that. And so she's also a master martial artist and assassin, Olympic level athlete with enhanced reflexes and strength, weapons master, master of stealth, expert acrobat, and markswoman, nervous system control, pressure point location, and she's multilingual. So... Just a few things.
Just really got it all. I think when was it? It was the Eternals episode where I was like, all these guys got the same powers pretty much.
Yes.
And like everybody's superhero is just strong.
It's just strong and capable. And so the film version, again, is quite similar to the comic counterpart. And then the series adaptation displayed a few of the many. Certainly less supernatural, despite supernatural elements of the story. But yeah, she's got an interesting mixed bag. But yeah, they had more time to focus on in the film than they did in the series, which, you know, makes sense, I guess. And it was also interesting because we were just talking about how what makes Daredevil so great as a character in live action is that his world is so grounded. And it's just supernatural enough that you know it's like a quote-unquote superhero show. But when you look at the grander scale, even with the Defenders folded in, Elektra is still a very interesting character because she is so on the fringe of like veering into a superhero territory.
Yes.
You know, like all these mythical things are happening and magic and power. And yeah, it's very curious, but that's what makes Elektra Elektra. So family, friends, and affiliations. There's not too many on this at all, but they're very, very important, all things considered. And so right off the top, Christina and Hugo Costas Nachos.
I swear I am going to get nachos after this. I swear to God.
We should have done Taco Bell.
This is getting incepted in my brain.
Nachos. I'm like,
oh my God.
Nachos.
Some chips nachos. Sounds great right now.
Nachos. So simply said, Hugo was a businessman in the comics who later became the Greek diplomat to the U.S. And Christina, Hugo's wife. Okay, so I got to show you this panel. So this particular issue was drawn by the incomparable Bill Sienkiewicz, who may not be everybody's cup of tea, but a very layered artist, very, very incredible artist. And so this is from, I believe, Elektra Assassin number one. And so he is a very multi-layered, multimedia sort of artist, right? Uh-huh. And so the first issue literally begins like this.
Oh my gosh.
And it's Elektra telling the story of her parents from inside the womb.
Oh my gosh.
Very interesting, okay? And it looks very childlike. It's very like
whimsical. Yeah.
Okay, well, the thing is that... unfortunately, because her father was in line with bad people.
Sure, as they always are.
They get shot while on vacation, Christina and Hugo. And so, unfortunate for Christina, she is shot multiple times and dies while pregnant with Elektra.
Oh my God.
And so, this is the baseline of... why Hugo is the father that he is, right?
Got it. Yeah.
Because his wife perished right in front of him. He got shot too, but he survived.
Yeah.
And he promised Elektra while she was in the womb, he was like, you will survive this.
Yeah.
And he says, he promises to her then and there, I will protect you for all of your life. Mm. So she is birthed despite Christina's condition, and then from that moment, yeah, he vowed to protect his daughter at all costs, even at the expense of his own life. Uh-huh. Clearly. So yeah, the mom and dad just ill-fated. There's obviously more to Hugo because he is, you know, like a basically a Greek mobster in so many words.
Yeah,
but we've seen different iterations of him already in live action. Two. And yeah, you get the idea. Power, money, control. This is what the man represented. And unfortunately, he was taken down for that. So in live action, he's just known as Nicholas Nachos.
Okay.
Nachos.
Dude, I swear to God, I'm gonna do it.
And so Nicholas, he was first portrayed by Eric Avati in 2003's Daredevil film. Then a younger version appeared in 2005's Elektra, portrayed by Kurt Max Runt. Christina, however, is never credited by name, but she was portrayed by Jana Mitsola in Elektra. So she's literally in that movie. She only has one line, but she's in it. She's in like three scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just credit her as Elektra's young mother.
Wow. Like, okay.
And so as far as live action goes for Nicholas, so he was Lieutenant to Wilson Fisk in the film, and he attempted to sever his relationship with the Kingpin, but of course he paid his debt in blood thanks to
Bullseye.
And then Elektra witnessed her father's death, believing Daredevil to be the killer because he had the what do you call it, baton in his chest. I don't know what a better word is for it. Yeah. And then she later went toe-to-toe with Bullseye after learning the truth. And then she died by Bullseye's hand. And so as far as the Netflix series is concerned, she was then presented as a diplomat's daughter and debutante, as I mentioned. And then Nicholas was previously... he's only mentioned in Daredevil Season 2. So they don't bring him back at all. He's already dead. He's long gone at this point in the MCU. And so he was apparently previously a large investor in Roxxon Corporation.
Interesting.
Right. An organization that's been threaded along in various parts of the MCU. So we've heard Roxxon in Loki, in Spider-Man obviously.
Game, yeah.
And then I think Iron Man, maybe?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Very vaguely.
Yeah. But yeah, it's been everywhere. And so that is the only actual notation that Elektra makes about her father, is that he did business with Roxxon. They really wanted to keep that business, but she mm-hmm. wanted out of it. And so he otherwise has not made a re-entry into the MCU, and he probably won't, because again, he's dead in the timeline already. He's been dead for at least 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Probably 20, because they're operating on 2027 at this point. So yeah, probably won't see him again. Someone we have seen a couple of times over is Stick, who, yeah, surprisingly has a pretty weighty effect on Elektra and her background beyond Matt. And so we've seen a lot of Stick as far as the series is concerned, and as well as in the Elektra film. But in the comics, these two don't seem to be as heavily threaded together as their live action counterparts, but they still bear an obvious weight of importance for one another. Like I kind of mentioned above, he kind of fostered her through the chase. And so he rehabilitated Elektra and attempted to keep her morally good throughout the early years, even sending her to Wolverine's aid.
Wow.
During a notable arc in the 1996 run of Wolverine.
That's Volume crazy. 2.
Yeah, so this is the point where in Logan's history, he had a solo title, and it was the second one, and he was feral. He didn't know how to speak. He didn't know anything.
Ah, okay.
And so Stick sent Elektra to sort of tame him and kind of get him back into human working order. And so I believe she taught him, not her specifically, but she helped him become more human again. Mm-hmm. And so that's all in due part to her. And they actually team up quite a bit back in the 90s. And then most recently, Stick and Elektra have clashed over the corruption of Matt during a storyline called Shadowland. And so yeah, there's obviously the common denominator of Matt Murdock in all of these situations. But yeah, Stick was hoping to keep his pupils morally good. He's like the beacon of light when it comes to these characters, right? Because Matt, once again, let the devil in. Like, you know, he's got the good and bad, which is very ironic, and, you know, it's significant to the character. And Elektra is actually kind of the devil on his shoulder in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah.
Because she's always corrupted in some way. So they clashed. They clashed in this particular storyline, and Elektra just wanted, she liked him tough and hardened and cold, and
yeah,
like the series. She wanted to see him kill people and just let the devil out. But, you know, Stick's always there to try and keep the peace, I guess. So in live action, however, so he's first portrayed by Terrence Stamp in the Elektra film and then Scott Glenn in the Daredevil series. So, yeah, again, we'll discuss a little bit about Stick here and there throughout this episode. But yeah, in live action, he not only resurrected Elektra from death, but he further trained her in the film. So you didn't get to see that yet. But Stick was not at all prominent in the Daredevil film. He was more prominent in the series for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And he played a huge part in Elektra's life in the series, speaking of. And he trained her. It was so crazy because I've I have not watched those episodes since they came out, right?
Yeah.
So it's been 10 years, almost 10 years. But yeah, it was interesting to rewatch because, yeah, he trained her since she was like 10,
yeah,
maybe 12 at most, with his group of good ninjas, so to speak. We call them, yeah, and they're called the Chaste. And so, yeah, he wanted to keep her in this very good standing way of life. And then later, as an adult, Stick summoned her again, but this time to bring Matt into the Chaste.
Yeah.
Which she very much failed at because she herself is compromising and manipulative and rage issues and kind of evil. But the two remain intrinsically linked through the Daredevil series and into Defenders. And despite it all, Elektra killed Stick in Defenders. You did not see that. Yeah. Spoiler. My bad. But yeah, she kills him, unfortunately, in that, and it's kind of a shock because it's not like a fake out. She killed him and in front of Matt, and Matt loses it as he usually does. But yeah, that was the end of that. But they again, the most, I don't even know if it's fair to say comic accurate, because they both, the film and the series both had pretty strong points as far as him training her goes.
Yeah.
But the route that they took with Elodie Young's is so far off that it's like, oh, she's a little cray cray.
I just remember it being like, she's like super violent, pretty much.
So violent. And she's so, yeah, she's quite different from Jennifer Garner's in that Jennifer Garner has a certain poise and grace to her that I feel is more reminiscent of like at least Elektra in a classic sense. But Elodie is very, she doesn't stop. She's incessant.
Yeah.
She just keeps going and keeps going. And so, yeah, unfortunately Stick falls at her hand because she literally stabs him through the chest. And I think she did it multiple times. Like I think she did stabby stab, and Matt was like, "Stop!" And this is after, by the way, she took down all the defenders, including Jessica Jones, which doesn't make sense to me. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that.
For the story.
So for love interests, don't be shocked. We're only
one person and one person only.
We're only going to talk about Matt Murdock, aka Daredevil, and so. Three simple words sum them all up. Tragedy, trials, and tribulations. This is from Marvel's mouth. You know what I mean? They even said that. And so, as we mentioned up top, the two were magnetized to one another from the beginning, but in many ways, their romance was utterly doomed. The original connection seemed more authentic than what's been written into canon after the fact. And so, initially, it was very like, oh, they both were into each other, made it happen, worked until it didn't.
Yeah.
They've since gone back. Mm. They were like, actually, back in the day, you know, that pure, wholesome story we wrote?
Yeah.
She was actually trying to get him into the hand, like all this time, which is kind of crazy to me. I'm like, why can't you just let them actually be attracted to one another? But they went back and not retconned it, but just added to the existing storyline that she was angling to get to him for one reason or another. She always wanted to manipulate him for some reason, had some ulterior motive, and it was pretty much with the intention of getting him to submit to the hand in one way or another. And so, despite the 1981 storyline and that relationship that is described in that story,
It isn't
until about 2019 that they actually rekindled their relationship. So for 10, 20, 30 years, they were kind of like off and on friends with benefits, sort of. You know, they were never official. They were just kind of, they were just, you know.
They're just made for each other, but they can't be together.
Exactly. Hate to love, love to hate, right?
I can't be with you. Yeah. But I love you.
But I
want
to. But I can't. But I should. But I could.
I need you.
But I can't.
But I can't kill you.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah. So,
it's so funny.
So it spanned about 38 years. And they finally rekindled the relationship in 2019. But it's still on trend. They still don't. They can't make it work. But it works because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm.
Of course. Doesn't make sense.
And they've technically been married twice. It's also like very strange. But yeah, they've got an interesting dynamic. And so there isn't much to say other than the fact that if you go back and read through their history, it is very much a ballet, a deadly dance of two, and just a constant push and pull situation between the two. It's like a Chinese finger trap.
Sure.
That's them.
Yeah. Wow.
That's their relationship in a nutshell. So Matt Murdock, Daredevil in live action, first portrayed by Ben Affleck in 2003's Daredevil, and then most recently portrayed by the GOAT, my cinnamon roll, Charlie Cox.
Oh yeah.
As of 2015. And an honorable mention for Rex Smith, who portrayed him in 1989's The Trial of the Incredible Hulk.
Wow, it's so funny.
I need to go back and watch that because, Matt is Bruce Banner's lawyer in that TV movie. So in live action, initially quite quick when it came to the relationship in the movie, she got coffee, they got into a playground fight, and then they fell in love in the movie. Quick, quick, quick. It was
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Cheesy as hell.
Hey, that was so 2003. Good. That's how it is.
And Jon Favreau as Foggy Nelson.
That's right. Yeah. Yes.
I love Favy so much. He's so good. And so it was so simple. And so, because, you know, it was an hour 45 long movie. Of course, it had to be kind of quick. Which explains why it was so much more complex when it came to the Netflix version. And as we mentioned above, the killing of Roscoe Sweeney and the way that she re-entered his life and became a tremendous part of not only the Daredevil series, but the Defenders as well, is like, holy smokes, the impact that she had on just, you know, resurfacing and in Matt's life. He just completely derailed. And her presence alone, it constantly tests the devil within Matt. Again, awakening not only the passion he'd felt for his first love, but this innate darker side that he clearly has.
Yes.
He is not just a good Catholic boy.
He's not.
You even said it. We were watching the Daredevil episode together today. And yeah, you even said it, that it's like he just has this thing in him, right? That he just can't. He can't help but let it out.
Yeah.
Constantly. And you see it when he's fighting Muse and how he fought Fisk at the end of season three. You know, it's there. He just can't help but succumb to it. It's just something that is built in him. And she sees it. She even says it in the series. She's just like, oh, what does she say? She said something along the lines of like, I see this darkness in you. And she, the way she says it, she's so attracted to it. She's trying to pull it out. But of course, we learn that it's because she wants to bring him over to the hand, yeah. Right? But it's just very interesting that she can see and tap into that darkness and lure it out. But now we see he's doing it on his own without her even around. So it says a lot about said devil. So notable adversaries. There's only two that we're going to talk about today that actually coincide in both comic and live action. The first one being Benjamin Poindexter, aka Bullseye. And so these two cross paths all too often in comic continuity, but there otherwise is no actual substantial thread that binds them aside the fact that they're both assassins.
Yeah.
So it's really Bullseye is just intending to get to Daredevil somehow. Elektra's probably in his way for one reason or another. And he decides he wants to kill her. And so he's often sent to kill her as a goal, honestly, and so much that after a while you kind of just think that he just wants to do it for fun.
pure joy.
Yeah. Yes, as a psycho like Benjamin Poindexter would be, you know, it's fun for him, especially with somebody who is so hellbent on not wanting to lose.
Yeah.
Elektra's obviously so competitive, you know, how it's fun. It makes it fun for Bullseye. And so, funny enough though, you know, we don't see too much crossover in the live action, but, Benjamin Leonard Dex Poindexter Bullseye first introduced in 2003's Daredevil portrayed by Colin Farrell. Oh my God. Yeah. Ripe, tender age of 26 when he portrayed that madman, by the
way. That's
right. So crazy to think about. And also to think that that film is pretty much 25 years old.
Gross.
Yeah, right. Oh my God.
Gosh.
And then, of course, most recently portrayed by the magnificent Wilson Bethel as of 2018 in Daredevil season 3.
That guy,
God, he's so good. I can't wait. I hope they bring him back another round because he will not die. Speaking of, in live action, we know that Bullseye is responsible for killing Elektra's father in the first film. Even Kingpin says at one time, wrong place, wrong time, wrong family.
Yeah.
You know, something along those lines to Matt about the dynamic that they all share. Because, yeah, you know, he fell in love with this woman, Grecian-American, and her father is a diplomat. And, you know, Bullseye was in the right place to kill the wrong person with the wrong woman. Woo! So, yeah, she just, once again, got in the way. And so later in the film, Elektra fought Bullseye on the rooftop, you know, in her new black suit and all that good stuff. But similarly to the comics, Bullseye stabbed Elektra through the chest and out her back with her own sigh. Yeah, again, like, it's so nuts that it's the comic accuracy that even to the point that she's hoisted off of her feet.
That is with, graphic.
Yeah, with the side jutting out of her back, which is funny because in this comic, technically, this is still within the parameters of comic code.
Really? As long as like, it's like a blood thing, right?
Because, yeah, you don't see it enter. You just see the implications. That's true. You just see something
poking out.
Yeah, you just see something poking and it's like, you don't see blood, so...
Yeah.
Whew, but they sure showed you in the movie. And yeah, the fact that... The one thing that... The one drastic change of the movie and the comic, however, is that Bullseye sent Elektra tumbling off onto another rooftop to where he left, he fled, and then Daredevil watched her die, which... Funny enough, is the same line that he said to Heather in this week's episode of
Spoiler,
Daredevil.
Sorry.
Spoiler! stay with me. But in the comic, Elektra is, you know, like nearly gutted. And Bullseye, in all his sadistic nature, just puts on an overcoat and a hat and follows her as she crawls all the way to Matt's apartment or house. And she dies in his arms. Well, Bullseye looks on from the crowd, just lighting a cigarette, enjoying the day. So they have this very similar relationship in the film and the comics. But as far as I can recall, they have zero crossover in live action.
That's crazy.
Which is very curious because I feel like they could have done so much. But because they went so like gung-ho on presenting Elektra as... her own sort of sadomasochistic, like evil, like prominent person in Matt's life, and also with the hand, who we'll talk about shortly.
Yeah.
It's almost like they didn't have room to make that conflict. And even now, it wouldn't make sense necessarily, timeline wise. Like, and it makes me wonder if they're going to revisit this particular moment in history.
Oof.
Or have they moved on past it? Will Bullseye do it to someone else?
I mean he's already done it once. He's done something.
So it's like, and also how many times can Elektra die?
Yeah.
So there's also
the same amount of times as Uncle Ben can.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, exactly, right?
And yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, okay, they've moved on so far from that moment in Daredevil's life that it might not make sense to actually go back there and throw these two characters together that have not yet interacted in quote unquote MCU continuity. So, like, yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see sooner than later because Bullseye ain't done yet and Elektra's body was never found. So there's still room for something. And so moving on from that, again, I wanted to just tackle the ones that we've actually seen in live action. And the other one is The Hand.
The Hand.
The Hand. And so if you aren't familiar by now, The Hand is a global order of evil mystical ninjas prominent in organized crime. And so just for funsies, I wanted to mention that, yeah, there's a lot of, for some reason, and now I want to take a deep dive into it, there's some overlap between Daredevil and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because not only was the hit 'em low olive oil from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but the play on the hand and the foot soldiers is also Daredevil and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And on top of that, the goo...
Yeah.
The goo that blinded Matt Murdock is the same goo that created the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And that is canon. I did not write that as a joke. It is true. Look it up. Don't know why, though. But anyway, in the comics, the organization that is known as The Hand is a recurring force for many in the comics, especially Elektra, because due to her affiliation with the group The Chaste in the comics, led by Stick. So just a sidebar once again, The Chaste were responsible for her resurrection after death at the hands of Bullseye. And they even went as far as to cleanse her of the dark part of her soul, separating it into another entity for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
So the joke is that Elektra doesn't have a main adversary because it's herself.
Mm.
That's the thing.
That's deep.
Yeah, it's super deep. I was like, dang, okay. Yeah, so it's not Daredevil, even though pretty prominent.
Yeah.
It's one of those lovers to fighters, haters, lovers, enemies things. But she is constantly at war within and with herself. And that's it. That's her biggest enemy. But as far as the Hand is concerned, in modern comics, so she's fought them on and off throughout the entirety of her tenure, if you will. But in modern comics, she wanted to form this organization called the Fist, intended to combat the Hand and take them down once and for all. Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm just kind of like, I don't know what, I think it was Chip Zdarsky, I'm not sure. But whatever the author was on, whatever drugs this man was taking, my gosh. Some of the storylines are so, yeah, they're very interesting. And so anyway, Matt and Elektra at one point became king and queen of the Fist.
And, Mephisto.
He brought him back.
That's a good one.
Mephisto. Yeah. So there's that. But yeah, the Hand. So in live action, they were first introduced in live action in 2005's Elektra, which is kind of crazy to think about because they've been in live action continuity here and there in different films and different series for 20 years now. And they were most recently utilized in 2017's The Defenders. So they were also in The Wolverine, which I think is a really amazing kind of interesting place to experience the characters because they are very accurate to their comic book counterparts, that they dissipate into green mists when they die and they turn into light beams and stuff. It's kind of funny. They are no different also in the fact that they go as far to achieve their goals in obtaining power and immortality. Mm-hmm. That is the name of their game. And so in the Elektra film, they were seeking the treasure, which ended up being this young protege of Elektra's. So she was on an assassination job to kill a father and daughter. And the daughter ended up being this amazing, skilled treasure of sorts. And she had this power that the Hand wanted to obtain and use for their own good. And then in the Defender series, they were seeking the Black Sky, which was originally in the guise of a small child that somebody kept in a container of some sort. And then it ended up being Elektra herself.
Oh my gosh.
And so they wanted to weaponize her and make her into this femme fatale that they could control. It's like their own Winter Soldier of sorts. But I wanted to note that it's the Hand themselves as an organization, especially in the comics, are really interesting because they were kind of like the blueprint of what began to make these femme fatale characters in comics. So if you put Elektra and Psylocke next to one another and you look at their character designs,
yeah,
it's like raven haired, very sensual,
yeah,
very fit ninja assassin female fatales. And their common denominator was that they were both involved with the Hand. And so the Hand is like a manufacturing system for...
company or a factory that
a just... they just pump out...
It's like the Red Room for ninjas.
Exactly right.
Love that.
It's so good. It's so accurate. Wow. It's so, no notes. That is perfectly on point. So yeah, they really kind of fostered this methodology in the comics, and so they're bringing them back into prominence as far as live action is concerned. So I'm curious, especially with all of this groundwork that Captain America Brave New World has laid down, right, with Japan and the adamantium trade, and are any of these people part of the Hand or working in those factions? So it will be interesting to see if and when they return, in what form will they be? Because they could have been sneaking around Madripoor during Falcon and Winter Soldier, for instance, you know?
Yeah.
So they're everywhere. They could be everywhere. They're global. So yeah, at their core, the Hand are simply a bunch of magical ninjas that cause chaos in live action. So we'll see where they go next. But before we close out the notable adversaries, I wanted to also mention in the film, Elektra, she also encounters adversaries Master Roshi, Kirigi, Tattoo, Kinko, Typhoid, and Stone, two of which have no comic book counterparts. So I believe it's Master Roshi and Tattoo. They're interesting adversaries. They come in really hot. They're only in it for so long, and then they get taken down one after another like dominoes. Again, the movie has a 1.6 on Letterboxd, so let that tell you everything you need to know about them. And an additional honorable mention for Cassandra Nova, Huh. And her crew from Deadpool and Wolverine, they have zero crossover. So I didn't even want to mention them further. Yeah, none of these characters, but Cassandra Nova and her crew, at least, they didn't have any crossover with Elektra in any grand scheme in the comics. So not even going to talk about it.
Uh-huh.
But they were cool in the movies. So other versions and in other media. Yeah, in 2019, calling back to where we talked about her costume, Elektra took on the helm of Daredevil as the woman without fear. And so I tried to think of how to best summarize this for you, Jeff, and I could not come up with anything that was remotely concise or made sense. So I'm going to just mention the way that Marvel.com mentions it, because that's the only thing that makes sense. So after Daredevil was found guilty of murder, Elektra volunteered to keep Hell's Kitchen safe. She even accepted Matt Murdock's challenge to embrace the light instead of the darkness by doing so as Daredevil. This resulted in the most drastic change attire to date. So is this really slick outfit, cowl, ponytail, and then, yeah, like Elektra meets Daredevil outfit. I think it's probably her sharpest outfit to date. I wasn't on board for them both being Daredevil at first, but you know what? It's pretty okay. I dig it.
You gotta carry the helm.
Yeah, you gotta carry that helm. Yeah, so Matt had been put in prison, and so no one was taking to the streets of Hell's Kitchen and protecting the city. So reluctantly, she took up the mantle and became Daredevil.
Wow.
Yeah, and so it's interesting. And so, yeah, they've co-opted. So it's not just one or the other. They've literally co-opted in like Daredevils, which is pretty sick if you think about it. But yeah, that's definitely the most recent of comics in the last 6 years. So some interesting stuff has happened since then. Definitely check it out if you're curious. So for Almost Was, I could not find a damn thing at all.
I mean,
nothing. But yeah. Again, we mentioned that Jennifer Garner was such an it girl. That,
I mean, and it was also, that also the movie that they both, like, that's where they fell in love?
Well, more so, which is funny, because I love that you can tell the Ben Affleck, Jennifer Garner timeline based on Daredevil.
Yes, pretty much.
But what I learned yesterday, in fact, was that they met on the set of Pearl Harbor.
That's right.
Yeah, in 2000.
Yes.
And then they began dating while filming Daredevil.
Got it. So they weren't married yet.
They weren't married yet. And then they got married after the film in 2004 or something. And then they had their first baby right before or right after she did Elektra. So I was like, wow, their timeline is very much based off of Daredevil, which is just so funny because it's like, wow, the attraction really hit. And, you know, they've co-parenting like king and queen because they're still like besties in a weird way. But I love that. And I also like related but not related. I think it's hilarious personally that my love for Evanescence came from my love for Daredevil. I got into Evanescence because of Daredevil, because they were on the soundtrack.
Makes sense.
And then, like, can you imagine the course of my life that would have changed if I didn't, like...
If you didn't, yeah.
If I didn't into that, I was like, holy crap.
You would have never discovered absolute greatness.
Yeah. Oh, my God. fun fact... They carried Evanescence over into Elektra too. So they have two songs on the Elektra soundtrack as well.
Yeah.
Just FYI. So yeah, I think Garner had it from the get-go. I think they were like, it girl, she's great. Let's just bring her on board. And then they hired her and she was in. And then made sense. And Ben Affleck and, you know.
Yeah.
The rest is history.
I mean, yeah, they're probably two of the biggest like...
Yeah. I guess at the time.
Well, yeah, Ben Affleck, like they did Goodwill Hunting, right? That was like in mid-90s.
Right.
So, on the up.
And like Dogma and, you know, the films he did with Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he was definitely going up there. She had like Alias and was
Alias.
Yeah. And she had all these bit parts in movies.
Just quintessential movie stars.
Yeah. And then like, boom, A-listers. And then they did this movie and it was like, oh.
Damn.
I loved it. Anyway, But but yeah, so I couldn't find anything, even when it came to Elodie Young, like and the TV version. But as we veer into feature of the character in the MCU, Elodie Young is rumored to make a return to the series, though there are conflicting reports due to a casting call recently made for Daredevil Born Again Season 2.
Born Again!
Do it! Commit! So apparently they're looking for females of Greek descent.
Interesting.
Which is like, huh?
Yeah, very specific.
You gonna go proper? You gonna do full proper for this one?
Very specific.
But to your point, would it be the same one? Would it be a multiverse situation?
I know. Like, see, that's where the multiverse gets like, oh my God, I don't know. But that's like, who cares?
I love that they're like, we'll erase.
Or maybe just like, maybe it's a recast. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I think if anyone deserves it, and you know, we said this earlier, I'm glad that they didn't end up sticking to the recast of Vanessa, because imagine recasting that woman. She's so incredible. And with Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
But if they end up recasting her, okay. I think I'd be down as long as it's the right person that can bring a little column A and a little column B. She can't be super freaking crazy or just really mute. Because like in Elektra, I promise you, Jeff, she smiles twice. That's it.
Nice.
Like, in Daredevil, she's like normal.
Yeah.
But in Elektra, she is stone cold. And she's great. Again, Jen Garner. Love Jen Garner. But she never smiles in that movie. Literally twice. So somebody in the middle that can do it all. Oh, man. I would love to see. But we'll see. Sooner than later. Because you know what? Social media is posting every damn spoiler they can from season two filming. It's really annoying me. Have you seen the spoilers?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. So, wow. Suit looks great, though.
It looks amazing.
I'm down.
People love Daredevil, so it's like they just want to eat it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charlie Cox. Woo! my king. But anyway, some suggested reading for y'all if you're interested in this crazy sociopath of a beautiful woman. 1986's Elektra Assassin from Team Frank Miller and Bill Sienkiewicz. 2003's Daredevil, The Man Without Fear. Amazing run. I like no notes. Almost every single Daredevil arc that has ever been has been pretty solid. It's been a little...
little been interesting. Here and there.
Yeah, it's a little here and there. It's a little all over the place, but there's definitely some good stuff. Mm-hmm. One of my personal sort of favorites. I don't want to call it a favorite, but I did love the first 10 issues. 2014's Elektra solo series from W. Hayden Blackman and Mike Del Mundo. And of course, the original run of Daredevil number 168 through 181 for some prime Elektra real estate. There are many, many more. I can't even begin. All I'm saying is read them all. It's great. Daredevil is a treasure that should be heralded.
I agree.
And I'm glad that he's getting his due. The devil's due. Like, full on.
The devil's work is never done.
Never would have guessed he would become one of the most popular Marvel characters in history.
Yeah.
And... last note, just please visit manwithoutfear.com for all your Daredevil needs. Kuljit Mithra, he is the owner and runner of the site. He is the ultimate Daredevil super fan.
Hell yeah.
He's such a fan, they've even drawn him into comics.
Hell yeah.
I love
that. Deserved.
Yeah, I almost met him in Toronto a couple of years ago, and we just missed each other because I didn't know he was there, and I forgot he was Canadian.
Oh.
And like we just missed each other, but he's so cool, at least from what little I've talked to him, and he's on it. Anything that's Daredevil, he will know about it.
He's eating right now, then.
The merchandise, the live action, everything. Yeah. Comics, he is on it.
He's eating right now.
Yeah, he is feasting. So manwithoutfear.com, check him out. He could talk about these characters so much better than I certainly could. But yeah, give him some support. He's fantastic. And so with all that said, that's the end of the show. Thanks for listening. So next episode, oh my gosh, can you believe that by the time that we record again?
Yes.
It will be the end of Daredevil's Born Again season
one. Born Again!
So join us in a couple of weeks where we will discuss the final episodes as well as the entire season. Really?
Yes, episode 8 and 9.
Eight and nine will be dropping in the next 2 weeks. So yeah, we'll catch you then at the tail end of that.
Woo!
And then we're gonna roll into a little more Daredevil with a Kingpin episode.
Oh yeah, we're sticking with the times. I think I said at the top of the year or. Yeah. At one of our last mini Marvels last year.
Yeah.
We're eating this year.
We're eating.
A lot of good stuff.
Yeah, we are.
So, yeah, we're going to get into it.
Into it. And also, Jeff, before I move on or forget to say it in our next episode, it's our 4th anniversary.
It's April. Oh my God. Yeah. Because we started in April 2022.
Yeah, we did. How crazy is that? Wait, 2020?
Yeah. 2021. Because it's 4 years.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow. So, happy anniversary.
Wow.
And thanks for sharing our anniversary with us and Daredevil. So, yeah, catch us back in a couple of weeks for more Daredevil discussions. And finally, thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and a special We Are Groot salute to... Robin, Edgar, Andrew, Nats, Andrea, Ashley, Jenny, Melanie, Joe, Liz, Ariel, Chris, Katie, Sherry, Tyler, Ed, and Laura. Follow us on social, STRKCNTRST. And if you like what you hear, review, rate, and subscribe.
Once again, thanks for listening. We will catch y'all in the next one.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
There is always this glorious darkness inside you. That's why I took you to Roscoe Sweeney's. And yes, that's why I loved you. That's why I loved you.